Toastmasters, Would-Be Toastmasters, listeners and friends, you are very welcome to the Talk Show for Talkers here on irishtalkers.com. And may I wish everybody a very happy 2024 New Year. This being the first episode in our new season, season number 10. You can send us an email, and we'd love to get your emails, to info@irishtalkers.com. You can find us on Facebook, where we are desperately bad at updating you, but we're still there as the Talk Show for Talkers. This week is our magazine show, and we have, as usual, a full program for you. James is going to be talking about starting or something. Good starts? I don't know. Well, we'll soon find out. There will be a word of the week, as always, and I will be turning my attention for the umpteenth time, probably, but it's well deserved, to storytelling. I'm joined, as always, this week by the jolly James Finnegan. James, you're very welcome.
Thank you, Moira. It's a pleasure to be here again.
And unfortunately, Paul Omani is still not able to join us, and we wish him all the best. Let's dive straight in, because I've no idea what good starts are, except that when I get in the morning, that's a good start for the day. James, what's a good start?
What's a good start, Moira? That's a very good question. A good start is something that gets you going, that gets the audience going, because apparently it has been worked out that you have 10 seconds to grab an audience's attention, which isn't terribly long. And in that 10 seconds, they will decide whether they're going to stick with you or whether they're going to tune out. So you better grab their attention pretty darn quickly. So here's a few well-tried and tested methodologies that help. The first one, of course, is to tell a story. Are there any more magical words, especially at this time of year, than once upon a time? Number two, say something bold from your individual point of view. Be very careful. Don't go into the political, don't go into the extreme versions, but say something that makes them sit up, makes them listen, makes them pay attention. A third method is to ask a question, but make sure that you are expecting some kind of response. Have a pause. Wait for the hands to go up, or at the very least, the heads to nod. And you can do that by just leaning forward a bit, as if to encourage the interaction and the response. Number four, get the audience to laugh. Find a few little witty, smart one-liners, but be very careful. You don't want to lose half the audience by insulting them. And the fifth and the final hint is to ask the audience to visualize something. Imagine there is a Santa Claus. Wow, wouldn't that be a wonderful start? And wouldn't that get the audience engaged? How do you start your stories? How do you get that interaction? And now that we've seen that our contests have gone back to in person, we've seen that sudden development of encouraging the interaction between the speaker and the audience. It's so much nicer and so much more rewarding than trying to claim it from the screen. Let us know what methods you use to grab the audience attention right at the start. We'll be fascinated to hear from you. Back to you, Moira.
James, I wholeheartedly agree with you. I probably spend more time on that first sentence in a speech when I'm writing my speeches than I do on anything else or any other part of the speech. And I quite often go back and rewrite, having written a speech and decided exactly what I'm going to say, what I'm trying to get over. I often go back and actually rewrite that opening to make it even more grabbable.
Well, I think that's important, Moira, because if you can grab them at the start and leave them with something positive at the end, you really have a fine speech.
Absolutely.
They kind of hopefully forget what you were waffling on about in the middle.
Indeed. Let's move on to the next section of the show, which, of course, is always our word of the week. And once again, I failed to use it in time, so I shan't pretend that I'm being very clever, because I'm not. I shall hand you over to James to tell us all about this week's word.
Thank you, Moira. The word of the week is reconciliation, a restoration of friendly relations. And knowing how Moira loves to delve into the depths of where did these words come from, I've gone back as far as Middle English with a reconciliation, which is also Anglo-Norman Middle French. Now, my research didn't go back into what exactly Anglo-Norman Middle French is, but suffice to say that whatever it is, they finally come together in an act of reconciliation. And isn't it a wonderful word? Isn't it a word that we could use so often? And isn't it a word we wish we could use more often?
Well, I'm looking at my dictionary, and it actually gives 6 definitions. And there's a couple I had no idea about. There's to reconsecrate a desecrated church, cemetery, etc. Did you know that?
I did actually. Now you've mentioned it. I came. There was a church back home that was reconsecrated, and it was called an act of reconciliation.
And also to restore an excommunicate or penitent to communion in a church.
Oh, there we are.
We've learned. We both learned something new.
That's the virtue of the word of the week, Moira, that we learn things and that we use it.
Absolutely. Well, there's a lot of words that come from reconcile, of course. Reconcilement, a reconciler. I guess Jerry could be a reconciler from last week. Pre-reconcile, that's a difficult one. Quasi? Never quite sure on that. Quasi-reconciled. Unreconciled, unreconciling. Whew.
You mean make up before you've broken up?
Something like that. And then if we go into the thesaurus, you've got a huge number of words here. Accommodate, appease, assuage, conform, coordinate, harmonize, integrate, pacify, placate. Take a breath. Rectify, resolve, reunite. And then a few thousand other ones as well, if we won't go into. Okay, that, I think, does the word of the week to death. Well, to life, I hope. Let's move on to the third part of our show, which is where I come in. And this week, I was looking, as always, to get inspiration at the Toastmasters magazine. And I came across an article by a photographer whose name, Biju Arai, Arakil, DTM. So he's, I believe, from India. He's a distinguished Toastmaster and he's a photographer as well. He's talking about 10 storytelling lessons from photography. So that sort of got me thinking. I'm a photographer as well, and I can resonate quite a lot with what this gentleman is saying in his article. So what it did was it took me through links at the bottom to an article by a very good friend of mine, Craig Valentine. And Craig is great at getting ideas about how you can make your stories come to life. So I'm going to go through just a few of the ideas in the article that Craig put out. We've talked in the past about foundational phrases, and I'm not going to go into depth on this one, except to say that a foundational phrase is short and snappy and is something that you can bring up in a 2 or 3 times in a speech that people will remember. And I thought of a couple of examples here. The story tells the message, right? That's an idea. And something from the COVID days, which might make you laugh if you live in the UK, eat out to help out. But it's a great little... I know James is holding his head in his hand because it was a terrible thing to do. But as a phrase, as a foundational phrase, it was rather good. And of course, my all-time favourite, I see something in you, but I don't know what it is. And that was from Dhananjay Hetiarachi from 2014. World champion. That's enough on that. Let's look at some other ideas. And this one got me quite interested. Don't start each story from the beginning. Huh? That's a strange thing to say, isn't it? But he said, well, what you can do is you can start your story at the end and say, di-da-di-da-di-da, but how did we get here? It didn't start that way. What happened was, and you go back to the beginning of your story. So you're sort of giving the result, which can be quite useful for grabbing attention, and then using that to lead you into the story itself. Get to your stories quicker. Don't mess about. Go straight into your story. Okay, we've got to get a grab, something that's going to get your audience's attention. Ideally, that wants to be part of the story, but if it's not, use a question or use a quotation that relates to your story. Something like that which is going to grab your audience's attention. But then go straight into your story. Don't mess around. Don't be a guru of your own story. What's a guru? Well, in storytelling, the guru is the person who helps you get out of your problems. And of course, if you have paid any attention to the hero's journey, which, as I'm sure you're all aware of, is the basis of virtually every Hollywood blockbuster and every successful story that there has ever been. There is a guru, and the guru is the person who helps the hero to overcome their problems. Problems. That's a very interesting word, problem. You see, what makes it interesting in a story is not how wonderful life is and how fantastic and nothing, it really can't get any better. It's, oh God, I had a problem. I had a difficulty, and this difficulty got worse. And then someone came along and said, I can help you. I can help you get out of this problem. So what Craig is saying is, don't be your own guru, because that's not so interesting. We want to have somebody who is outside, somebody external. A lovely quote here: the longer you work on a story, the shorter it should get. Make your stories short and snappy. You know the old Shaggy Dog tale? Yeah? Well, of course, the whole point of a Shaggy Dog tale was to let you down at the end of it. But we don't want to do that, do we? We want people to be uplifted with our stories. So keep the story short. You keep it short, you keep the attention. If you drag it out with unnecessary details, then you risk possibly losing your audience. Okay, let's look on. Come out of your story and talk to your audience. Have you ever thought of that? You're in the middle of telling a story and you set a scene and you're bringing your audience into that scene by description and by dialogue, and then you want to ask the audience a question. Okay, a rhetorical question most of the time, but nevertheless, you can actually come out of your story and direct yourself directly to the audience, ask them a question, a rhetorical question, give them an answer, and then go back into your story. It's not something you should do too often because it can break the flow, but it's a technique that you can use just to keep your audience engaged. Make your audience curious from the beginning. Well, that's the grab, isn't it? It's the opening. Don't keep repeating your message. This is slightly different to the foundational phrase. So the foundational phrase is not necessarily your message itself. It's something which is going to remind your listeners of the message. So you can repeat that two or three times at least within your speech. But the message itself wants to be a bang at the end, that you can give hints as to what it is in your speech. And that's not a bad thing, but you don't want to actually repeat it. The story should lead up to the message, and the message should be self-evident. And if it's not self-evident out of the story, then you can state it, but at the end. One of the most favorite things that I like in storytelling is there's two things here, is to create characters. And by creating characters, I mean give your characters some life. Give a description of the character. James is sitting there with his finger in his mouth. He's listening to every word. He's hanging on to my words. And he's nodding his head, his grey head with his very nicely trimmed beard and his blue jumper. We can actually put words that describe the individual so that the person listening can make a visual picture. It might be a completely wrong picture. It might look like the devil instead of James, but, you know, that doesn't matter. What is important is that the audience does think about mentally, not actively, but automatically, if you like it, they picture the character in their mind. But the other thing is to set the scene. Let's say that we're having a conversation in my living room. I could actually describe what my living room is. I could say that my friend James was sitting on the comfortable settee with the cushions plumped up behind him, looking very satisfied and comfortable as he's sitting there. And suddenly, my dog jumps on his lap and he is discombobulated. Well, that's part of it, but maybe I should have said my rather large dog. But we can, by describing the scene, not only do we have our characters, but we can put our characters into a physical location which our audience can imagine in their mind. Let's zoom on. Show the emotional change in your character. And this is an interesting one. When you're telling stories, one of the important elements is the visual hints that you make with the way you're saying it. So if your character's state of mind is changing, you can actually represent that physically by the way that you actually express yourself visually. Now, I'm looking at myself on screen as I'm saying this, and I can see the animation as well, not just in my voice, I can see it in my face. And that's what we want to be able to do. We want to be able to give our character emotion visually. Okay, final thing, with few exceptions, keep your story short. Meh, yes. The longer you work on a story, the shorter it should be. We've sort of covered that earlier on, didn't we? Something interesting here as a throwaway line. Remember, you're not doing a stage play. You are having a conversation with your audience. Now, that might conflict with what we've also said about displaying emotion and using dialogue. And you know how we use dialogue, or how we try to use dialogue. Instead of saying, James said that, this, that, and the other, we say, and James said, hey, well, how about that, Moira? And Moira replied, yeah, that's really good. You use the characters and your position on the stage to exemplify the fact that a conversation is going on, rather than just describing a conversation. So it's bringing a dialogue well into your speeches. So that's part of it, and that is, to a degree, acting. But you are trying to tell a story and not create a play. You're trying to have a conversation with your audience which involves telling them something that they are going to enjoy and want to think about, and hopefully with a message that they're going to take away. Okay, that's it. I've rambled on rather, but have a look at the article in the magazine by that photographer, and click the link at the bottom of that story, which will take you to Craig Valentine's 15 Storytelling Tips for Weaving the Personal with the Universal. I love that. He has a real way with words, does Craig. That's it for me. James, I hope you you enjoyed more of that than your face gave indication. No, I'm being unkind.
I found it fascinating, Moira. In fact, I was thinking of, you know, the famous Ernest Hemingway story, Six Words.
Yeah.
Six Word Story.
Oh, that's, yes. Yeah. Yeah.
For Sale.
Yes.
Baby Shoes.
Yes.
Never Wore.
Yes. Yeah. It's difficult, if not impossible, to get anything shorter than that.
Well, if there is, I'd love to hear it. And we'd love to hear it. Maybe someone out there in the ether will send it in to us.
Indeed. Indeed. So on that happy note, let's bring this episode of the Talk Show with Talkers to a close. And we'll see you again next week. So from myself, Moira O'Brien, and from James, the jolly James Finnegan, bye for now.
Bye-bye.